been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Hey, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad that you can join us today. We've got a lot to talk about. Probably won't make it all the way through my agenda, but at least this week has a lot of news. I'm not sure whether or not it's as good as it's being hyped, but as most of you know, I guess, unless you've tuned out the news lately, we had a Fed rate cut, half a percentage point, I believe. I'm saying that correctly. And I don't know. The first article I'm going to talk about here in a minute is why the Fed rate cut won't solve the housing wealth gap. And we've talked about this almost every week for the last, I don't know, year, as to, you know, the interest rate is only a piece of the problem, but it is definitely a major cog in that scenario of, you know, having enough properties to satisfy demand, and having, more importantly, and this is where the rate comes into play, enough qualified buyers to buy the properties that are slowly coming to market. And we'll talk about a article that was in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was yesterday, or no, it was, let's see, the 14th. But anyway, before we get started with that, I want to give you my typical disclaimer we do at the top of the show, that none of the hosts, in this case, it's only me today, are rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. If you need such advice, or if you want such advice, we strongly recommend that you engage a professional advisor for real estate taxation, for real estate private partnership analysis and construction, etc. Putting deals together, or perhaps you're marching towards retirement and you would like to end up in a zero tax rate when you get to retirement legally. Believe it or not, there's certain kind of income that doesn't get subjected to tax, or there's other income that, as long as you're not over a certain level, you won't pay tax, including your Social Security. And the way you benefit from those strategies is you get out ahead of it and you start now. Even you 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, start now, where it becomes habit and you learn which income streams. Besides real estate, real estate's definitely a key one. I know I hear other prognosticators on the air, with the real estate mentor guru types, that talk about how real estate income is tax-free. And it's not overtly tax-free, but it can avoid tax for quite a while. And in fact, the way the current tax code works, if you have heirs, you can actually push off the tax effect past your lifetime. And in fact, you may, depending on how the market performs after your lifetime, your heirs may pay no tax. Depends on whether or not the step up in basis rule stays in place. If we have a Harris administration, I can guarantee you it will not. So if for no other reason other than the tax issues being bantered about these days and all the goodies that are being passed out without respect to the $150 trillion cumulative debt we have, and yes, you heard me right, it's really 150, it's not the 37 and some change that they talk about. That's only in the current budgetary cycle, the part that they will acknowledge. All the future years' obligations that we've already passed into law, it's not like they're concepts. No, they're statutes. We've already passed statutes that dictate indexing of Social Security, Medicare, and assorted other government programs. And while the budget hasn't been passed into law, I'm not sure when the last time we had a budget passed into law, but you can count on the departmental budgetary requests going up 30% every year. Why? Because as one DOD contractor that stayed at my corporate housing venue a number of years back told me, he said, if we don't submit a budget that's at least a 30% higher request than last year, our budget will get cut from last year. And when you think about the impact on that across all the departments in government and all the spending, I think then you begin to realize why we collect maybe $5 trillion a year in tax receipts and we spend $7 trillion plus, depending on whether we have a pandemic or not. That's how that happens. That's how we got here to where we owe so much more than we've collected historically. And by the way, the Congressional Budget Office, CBO for short, supposedly the nonpartisan referee or umpire, if you will, of all new legislation that's proposed, they put out a 10-year study. Every year they update it, and then sometimes during the year they update it, and they project, as we sit, that we will have deficits $2 trillion and some change for all, but I think it's 1 year, but we make up for that decrease in another one of the 10 years. Bottom line, on average, we will average about a $2.1 trillion annual addition to our country's cumulative debt. And that's assuming the markets don't at some point raise their head and say, why are we buying this paper based on the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which will soon, here in the next 4 to 5 years, be in a position where we can't pay 100% of the interest on the debt. And for those of you that listen to some of the more conservative cable shows, you know, because it's been in the news just this week, we surpassed our current fiscal year, which ends at the end of this month, September 2024, we will have surpassed the the defense expenditure. It's roughly 900 and some odd billion. We will have surpassed that with the interest on the debt expenditure. It'll end up this year somewhere in the $1.1 to $1.2 million trillion dollar range. And we're already past it. We passed it, I think, a couple weeks ago, if I remember correctly, which is unbelievable. But you think that's unbelievable? We're in the third spot, the third largest component of the U.S. Annual budget is interest expense. But in 10 years, if you look at the CBO study, the current 10-year forecast, you will see that interest expense is the number one component of the U.S. deficit. And I forget the number it's up to at that time, but, you know, Medicare, Medicaid combined is about, I think it's $2.6 trillion this year. The year ended September 2024. And so those will continue to go up as well, but the interest grows faster than even those categories. So you've got the Medicare, Medicaid, and then you've got Social Security, and then defense may still be in the fourth spot now. Who knows with what we've got going on in the world. That might be the only way we can get GDP to go up, and as a result we should have higher tax receipts, which is what we need, if not higher tax rates as well. And it's just math, folks. It's not Democrat or Republican. You can be whatever you want to be. It doesn't change the math. The math is no respecter of political party affiliation. And both of the two major parties have spent money like there's no tomorrow for a while now. And to fix it, it's going to take tax rates that are about double what they are now, or some combination of spending reduction and higher tax rates. And if you're not planning, if you're not converting your pre-tax retirement dollars to Roth, you're going to pay for it very painfully. Because, you know, when prospects or clients tell me, well, you know, I've got $2 million in my 401, I think I'm okay for retirement. And they're not thinking about what I'm going to project will be at least half of that, maybe more, probably more if you're in your 50s, less as a percentage if you're like me in your 60s, is going to go out to your silent partner, the government. And you really haven't factored that in. But those tax rates, by the time you're 70 or more, which is when your required minimum distributions will start, I can tell you with certainty, for the first time in my 64-year-old life, I believe it when I hear the logic on why the tax rates are going to go up. I've heard that, even just dial back to the point that I became a CPA back in the early 80s. And yeah, I've been hearing, well, the tax rates are too low. They got to go up. Well, guess what? We're in the period right now we're in is the lowest tax rates in most of our lives. I think in my case at 64, maybe the first 4 or 5 years of my life, we had a little bit lower tax rates. But I'm telling you, it's again, it's the math. It's the fact that our debt to GDP is in excess of 100% now. The economists, depending on their assumption set, some say we just crossed the 100% mark. I think CBO says we're right on the doorstep. But the reality is many economist assumptions show that we're at like the 137th to 150th percentile of debt to GDP, which is kind of the gold standard that most people will tell you is to what you watch to determine when we have a problem. Well, I can tell you right now, we've got a problem. I don't care which assumption set you use. And again, Roth and hard assets like real estate that go up with inflation. It's a very important concept. And further, can be invested in such a fashion as to delay or defer ultimately the tax that gets paid on the gains. Now, that's the rules as we have them now. It's not the insanity that has been proposed by the Harris administration, and at one point Biden, the Build Back Better Act, you may recall from what, 3.5-4 years ago, was going to tax unrealized gains, which is a concept that Harris is now bantering about. Part of her opportunity economy is the sledgehammer that's going to come for those of us that have assets that have gone up in value, but we haven't disposed of them yet. And were she to win, and were she to have a friendly Congress that would pass such nonsense, for the first time in our history, we would have to pay tax on gains, increases in value that we have not yet liquidated. Therefore, you don't have any of the cash that would come from that liquidation to pay the tax or to help shoulder the tax. It's absolute insanity. And if for no other reason, the opportunity economy is no reason to vote to get a regime in power that will be able to try to get those tax brackets or the taxation, forget about the tax brackets. Those are going to go up too, by the way. Capital gains and assorted, ordinary income components are going to, the rates will go through the roof. You watch if that happens. And boy, you talk about an impact on the economy. She just thinks that inflation is still too high, but she doesn't have anywhere near the mindset that she's somehow culpable. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break. Excuse me. We will circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com. nathan@npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com. nathan@npross.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me,
with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, we're back with more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross. Sorry for the confusion. Let's talk about the article that I mentioned. Is in the Wall Street Journal earlier. Was it Monday or maybe last Friday? It's the 14th. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but anyway, the tag or the title is basically suggesting that the rate cut we just got is not going to fix the problem we've got with, you know, people buying homes. And the subtitle is with home prices near record highs and cost of home insurance and property taxes, etc., right? And not just the amount, it's the fact that they're continuing to increase, and it's not necessarily inflation based. I mean, when you look at home insurance as an example, that's typically based on the experience rates or the experience of events that have occurred in a carrier's pool of homes or buildings or other properties they insure. So it's more to do with how many hurricanes have we had or how many flooding occurrences have we had or how many electrical outages, you know, the things that Houston, for instance, has had. And by the way, for those of you that aren't aware, I think I mentioned this a month or so ago, if you're a tax filer, you file your income tax returns, and you live anywhere in, I don't know if it's the whole state of Texas, it's most of Texas, it's definitely Houston. So, I can't remember the other large cities, but again, it's online, it's on the IRS disaster relief page. You can Google that, but we've got until February 2nd to file 2023 tax returns. And That is whether you're in the region that had the calamity or the disaster, or your books and records, i.e. your accountant, might be located there. So in any event, we don't wish calamity on anybody, but boy, we sure do appreciate having the extra time from year to year. I keep saying I'll never move my office out of the Houston area, but anyway, that's assuming, you know, we can minimize the calamity. Anyway, so let's dig in a little bit on this thought process that, you know, the interest rates are really just one thing that we're faced with, dealing with, and you know, we shouldn't, you know, pass up the interest rate decline, obviously, but it's not going to fix any problem for us investors or homeowners. And you know, the let's just browse through this article. The U.S. housing market is sharply divided between those who own and would-be buyers who cannot afford a home. It's a very true statement, and has been for a while. The Federal Reserve's widely expected interest rate cut, this was pre the actual cut that happened yesterday. Next week, we'll do little to close the gap between the two. A reduction in short-term interest rates would directly translate to lower rates for home equity lines of credit, making it cheaper for millions of homeowners to tap into their housing wealth. On top of that, homeowners who bought in late 2023 or early 2024, when mortgage rates were higher, are taking advantage of the recent drop in borrowing cost. Application for mortgage refinancings more than doubled from a year earlier in the week ended September 6, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. For current shoppers, mortgage rates have dropped from last year's highs, but not enough to offset other challenges in the market. Home prices are near record highs, inventory is limited in much of the country, and rising costs for home insurance and property taxes add to the expense. And this is really not even yet, I think they talk about it later, addressing the fact that the median home price requires a certain median income of the borrower slash applicant, and admittedly half an interest rate drop will add people, it will push some people over that median line, but the affordability is still a problem. And prospective buyers have been slow for, you know, this period anyway, to start, you know, getting into the market with the ability to find something they want to buy and can afford to buy. So affordability still remains an issue, according to Christine Cooper, chief of the U.S. or chief U.S. economist at CoStar Group. CoStar is one of the knowledge databases that we and others subscribe to. The housing divide underscores the wealth gap between homeowners who have benefited from several years of robust home price appreciation and renters who are facing one of the least affordable housing markets in decades. So those of you that are invested in real estate private partnership syndications, multifamily, which is what many of our clients have us review, you're sitting in the driver's seat in many markets. Now, granted, the absorption rates are down and the concession rates are up, but if you look at Florida Atlantic universities, as we do from time to time, their rent-to-buy index, you will see that in most U.S. cities, it's good to be king, or it's good to be the owner of multifamily units. And I'm going to suggest to you that most real estate investors, especially as they get older, like myself, would do well to consider adding multifamily to their portfolio. And for other reasons as well, you know, the thing that, you know, we talked earlier about getting your pre-tax 401 funds over to Roth, multifamily is like the planets aligning to maximize your throughput on how much you can convert once you're invested in multifamily. So the process is you roll your 401k over to either an IRA or a self-directed 401k, which is our preference, otherwise known as a solo K in the marketing world of IRA custodians, even though solo K does not appear that term anywhere in the Internal Revenue Code or regs. It does appear on the IRS website, and it also appears on most custodial firms' offerings. The IRA custodians typically provide the IRS approved documents, the prototype documents is what we call them. But we like the term self-directed 401 trust simply because the term, quote, a trust created pursuant to IRC, that's Internal Revenue Code section 401, end quote, is mentioned in the Internal Revenue Code. And boy, do we have some exemptions from some of the rules that even the IRAs don't have. The IRAs are subject to a tax referred to as UBIT or UBTI, and specifically it's a subset or a component referred to as UDFI, unrelated debt financed income. That's the one that matters. UBTI is unrelated business taxable income, or UBIT's unrelated business income tax. There's ways we deal with it. So you don't have to have the self-directed 401, but if you want to be exempt from the UDFI concept that catches many IRA multifamily syndicated investors, you want to qualify for the self-directed 401, and we focus on that option. We can definitely help you understand the requirements, and we can help you understand why you would prefer to do that over an IRA if you qualify. And many people qualify or can qualify once they understand what's involved. And we're not going to talk about it in depth, but I can just tell you, if you want to avoid or push back your RMDs, that's definitely one way of doing it. And if you want to reduce the conversion tax on your IRA, that's an even better reason to do it, because we get private company discounts when we're valuing the conversion process of pre-tax moving to Roth. And so you can as opposed to converting when your retirement funds are sitting in an account at Schwab or Fidelity, et cetera, your fair market value that you pay tax on is the end of business quote on one of the exchanges or some other measure that is less flexible in terms of discounts that get applied, that the private company arena enjoys. So we've got, with a real estate private partnership syndication, those of you that are invested in those options, you understand you've got significant lack of marketability. You cannot, in most cases, sell that interest without either, one, getting permission of your partners, or at least your lead partner, your syndicator, or the syndicator decides it's time to sell. And when you sell, obviously, everybody is able to sell their interest. But lack of marketability is typically a large discount, as is lack of majority control, which, you know, those are probably the two biggest discounts to value. And then there's 20 or more other potential discounts. If you have ever reviewed a private placement memorandum or a PPM, you can see a list of the 20 or 25 that apply to most real estate multifamily syndications. And if any of you want a PPM to review, I can get you one that's redacted so that you can understand more about those pages that you're going to see in that PPM. But in any event, going back to the article, I was reading the part where the housing divide underscores the wealth gap between homeowners and essentially renters, who are facing one of the least affordable housing markets in decades. And that is definitely true. However, I'll tell you that there's more people above the median income line that qualify for apartments than those that qualify to buy a home. And that's kind of the sweet spot we look for to determine in different markets whether investing in an apartment building makes sense. And again, right now, it's almost every market you'd rather be an apartment owner or a single family even owner that's you're renting than being a buyer. Home prices have climbed. This is staggering to think about this. Home price, and this is again on average. And I'm going to warn you again, none of us are average. We're all actual or normal. But we still got to look at averages, because that's the way people track things. That's the median or the medium that we use to try to normalize data. But home prices have climbed more than 50% since 2019. Helping homeowners build wealth. Homeowners with mortgages had $17.5 trillion in equity across the country in July, according to the Intercontinental Exchange. The mortgage outlook is improving. The 30-year fixed rate, well, they use the word tumbled. I would say it's gone down. It's declined to 6.2% this month, up from a 23-year high of 7.79 last fall, according to Freddie Mac. That is in part because Fed officials are expected to reduce short-term rates by at least 0.25 percentage points at the meeting that we had 2 days ago or yesterday, and they actually did it 0.5 of a percentage point. So let's see next month what that looks like in terms of increase, or the next board meeting, rather. Let's see if there's anything else in this article that I wanted to point out. This is worth noting. Homeowners are pulling out equity. About 90% of homeowners with mortgages could borrow against some of the equity in their homes while keeping a cushion of 20% equity, according to ICE, that's the Intercontinental Exchange. Total HELOC balances, home equity lines of credit, rose to $380 billion in the second quarter, up almost 12% from a year earlier. But anyway, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break. I want to come back, and I'm going to talk briefly about, I think we'll talk about a syndication that's come on the market. Either that, or I've got a couple other news articles. I'll scan them real quick on the break, and I'll surprise you when we come back. We'll be right back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Is it easy? No, that. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com. nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I think what I will do, and I'm having an issue here with my... Okay, looks like we're back online. Let's see here. Let me get back into that article. I'd dropped out. Give me just a moment. And what I want to say generally is we're seeing syndications coming back. I've had several cross my email screen or my desk, you might want to say, in the past week. And I have to say, you know, these are all, for the most part, these are distress situations where the amount of the distress, and typically they're from what we've talked about for a while now, which is the three-year bridge debt structure that's you know, permeated the syndication space, I guess starting a couple years ago, where it seemed like almost every transaction that happened was you know, structured in such a fashion as, you know, you had 3 year usually floating debt, although you could buy a rate cap, rate lock, and that would allow you to you know, have your mortgage payment, your debt service payment stay stable for a while. But you know, the problem is the Fed had 11 increases on the rate, and there were people that were good, what I would call good quality syndicators, that just didn't anticipate that high of a rate change to where they, you know, would need to raise their or buy a bigger rate lock. And rate locks aren't cheap. I know I am in a transaction where the syndicator bought a $3 million rate lock, and that's a lot of money, and yet that may not be enough. They're still having some issues. They're trying to negotiate with the lender involved, because, you know, they've kind of busted through the cap they paid for. But in any event, it's not just, are there some bad apples in the syndicator world? You bet there is. There most assuredly is. And I can tell you that in terms of vetting syndicators, I do it a little bit differently than I used to, in terms of checking for the ability to claw back if you know, the deal is headed south. I want to know that I've got a syndicator that's got a balance sheet and can put back capital that maybe we paid in the earlier at the outset that was for fees. You know, I've got a big problem with fees. I have had for years, and I point it out, and I don't tell you, I don't recommend, if you work with us to review your transactions, I don't recommend, I don't promote, I help you understand, and I don't invest. I don't invest your money in a deal. I show you, try to show you the math involved on how to pick a deal, and you'll get all the credit and you'll get the blame if I've given you the math and you decide that, hey, you want to invest in a certain deal. And hey, we're all adults. You get to invest in what you want to put your money in, and I get to invest in what I want to put my money in. But in any event, so we're seeing some deals in large measure. It's because of distress. And I had an article come in earlier today. Wow, before I got up, 5:37 a.m. And it's the title is CMBC. That's, I believe, Commercial Mortgage-Backed Securities. Specialist predicts 3-year cycle of increasing multifamily distress. I think it gets worse before it gets better. And I was told 3 clients that just yesterday. And it's not to say there's not transactions, because that's the corollary of why I had 3 reasonably good looking transactions come across that were not 10-year out type getting your money back. They were like 3-year out, get your money back. And they were getting the properties at a cost basis that I just felt like, man, there's no way they don't make money even in this market because they're getting it at such a low cost basis. But in any event, multifamily special servicing rates hit 5.71% in August. So that's the pool of loans that are in trouble. And by the way, there's somewhere between $650 billion and $700 billion worth of troubled multifamily debt. It is a huge number. There are not near enough lenders that are going to be willing to refinance these projects that need to find a home, because if they don't, they got to sell, and if they sell, they may be lucky to get any of their capital back at the current cap rates, and depending on the property's NOI, as you know from prior shows, we've talked about the variables of net operating income, NOI, and the cap rate, which is what determines your sales price. So effectively, you've got to have produced, you've got to have performed, and yet you've got all these things lined up against you. Your property taxes have gone up. Insurance premiums have tripled or quadrupled over the last 2 years. So that knocks down your NOI. But anyway, we're going to get back into this article tomorrow. I'm running out of time here. This problem with multifamily is nowhere near what the office sector is experiencing. But the thing is, the numbers don't really say where things are going. And to get a more comprehensive sense, we look at these troubled loan classifications. And in any event, we'll talk tomorrow about this article and the type of distress that we see coming over the next 3 years, because folks, if you're not in multifamily, now's the time to start looking and analyzing deals, because there are some deals out there and we're just getting started. Thanks for tuning in today. I'll be back on the air tomorrow at 11 a.m. And if you'd like to reach me, send me a text to 713-581-0195. And I'll connect with you either by answering it on the air or perhaps over the next week. Thank you.
Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.